BBRSDA's Waypoints is produced by BBRSDA. Those things said on Waypoints don't necessarily reflect the views of KDLG staff, management, or board of directors.
Welcome to BBRSDA Waypoints Radio Show. Today, we are talking all about fish quality and what is being done to make it even better. I am Frances Birch, Program Specialist with Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association and a lifelong Bristol Bay fisherman. Joining me today is Andy Wink, Executive Director of BBRSDA, Chuck Anderson, Vice President of Certified Quality Foods, and Izzy Ross with KDLG, who is helping to guide our discussion today.
Awesome. So I'd like to start out by talking about how BBRSDA started to focus on quality. BBRSDA has encouraged fishermen to increase the quality of their catch over the years. How did your approach to that develop, and what are you seeing this year?
Yeah, quality has been a focus of the RSDA since it was voted into existence in 2006, and we've seen quality improve and more and more chilled fish every year. BBRSDA contracts with Northern Economics to survey all the major processors each year looking at quality specifically. And in 2020, there was a record of 94% of the catch by the drift fleet was chilled last year in 2020, which was incredible, especially looking back at when we started doing this survey 13 years ago in 2008, just 24% of the drift catch was chilled.
Wow, that's a big jump in, you know, percentage of chilled fish. What difference has that made? I think BBRSDA has highlighted this over the years, but how does that change the product? How does that change the fish? Because obviously the fishery has been going on long before people were chilling as rigorously. So, you know, how has that changed what people are producing?
I can jump in and take a little bit of that, and maybe Chuck can give the buyer perspective and what he's seen, how he's seen things change over the years. But from all the different folks we work with, processors down through the supply chain, you know, we've known for a long time that consistent chilling is really important to fish quality. And, you know, this fishery has changed a lot over the years and the decades. And, you know, a lot of it used to go in cans. And so I always say Bristol Bay Sockeye used to wear a parka to the grocery store. Now it wears its birthday suit, right? So when you're talking about a fillet, the visual characteristics, the texture, the firmness, that's all that much more important. And it, of course, preserves taste too. And so because the product forms have shifted largely away from cans, more towards fillets, you know, chilling has become even that much more important. So, you know, it's amazing to see this shift and how much chilling percentages have increased. But I would say that that's also what the industry and the fishery needed to do. And it's done that. And it's quite an amazing transformation. You know, Chuck, how have you seen the Bay change over the last 10, 15 years that you've been tracking it?
Well, I think I'll date myself a little bit, but I can tell you what it was like 30 years ago. And we really looked forward to it. It was so exciting, you know, that we'd, you know, for July 4th or in July, we'd have this wonderful Bristol Bay sockeye salmon, and we love the red color. And I'm speaking like as a seafood manager. I was working at Safeway stores in Washington, D.C. And some other stores in Pennsylvania, and we love the sockeye season. It's a great flavored fish, and the visual, you know, bright red color in our cases, people just stop and just say, wow, what is that? And it was such a wonderful product. The problem was it was very inconsistent. You know, one box would be, you know, really nice, bright red, firm fillets and, you know, standing up and just, you know, shouting how fresh I am. And then other ones would be soft and, you know, bruised up and kind of mushy. And, you know, we try to fillet them sometimes, they just kind of fall apart. And I guess that was because, you know, a lot of the fish just weren't being chilled early, you know. And so, you know, when you don't chill the fish, you know, you look at it 2 or 3 days later and it's still a decent looking fish, but it takes, you know, 5 to 7 days or sometimes longer to get to some of these Midwest and East Coast markets, and the fish just doesn't hold up that well. So I've seen a tremendous increase in quality with the stores that I work with, and I still get behind the counter. I still work in the summertime and fillet and display sockeye salmon, and it's been a tremendous increase in quality over the last 10 years. And it's, you know, like Andy said, it's been needed. It's, you know, the fishermen need to make more money for every pound they catch. And the only way to do that is by increasing the quality. So it's been a really welcome change. And you can see it in the store level. You can see it in lower shrinks. You can see it in higher sales and higher demand and the higher retail price for sockeye salmon. I mean, we used to sell these things at, you know, $5.99 a pound, or, you know, for fillets, some crazy low prices because that's all we could get for them. But, you know, these days, you know, we're selling them for $19.99 a pound or $14.99 a pound. And, you know, hopefully more and more of that gets back to the processors and to the fishermen.
Got it. Just a quick, you know, kind of sidebar thinking about prices. Obviously, there were some really high prices for fishermen, you know, back in the 80s. And that's kind of, I guess, leveled out. Obviously, last year we saw a big dip with the pandemic, but, you know, we haven't seen as high of prices. So even though there's this push of quality improvements, there's, you know, fishermen aren't necessarily seeing that. What are the dynamics there?
Well, let me touch on base there. I you know, Andy and Francis will know, you know, why the prices were so low for fishermen in 2020. And that was a shame. So many good fish were handled so beautifully to have the prices so low. And there's a lot of dynamics behind that. But what I do see in 2021 is the demand has increased dramatically for fresh seafood through the supermarkets, especially. A lot of people, you know, didn't go to restaurants in 2020, so they learned how to start cooking seafood at home. So the demand has gone through the roof. The retailers have never seen increases in demand, whether it's for king crab, snow crab, lobsters, salmon, halibut, all kinds of fresh seafood products, a lot of which they would get at restaurants before. And, you know, now they were home. They weren't spending money traveling. They weren't spending money on commuting. So a lot of folks were getting extra money from the government, whether it be from unemployment benefits or extra SNAP benefits. So there was a lot of extra money out there that people were able to spend on seafood at home. So the price of, you know, snow crab at the retail store went from like $12.99 to $17.99. Now it's over $20 a pound in some retail stores. So I think that sticker shock, because it used to be, you know, for sockeye salmon, you know, the retailer said, I have to have that $9.99 retail price point to sell any decent volumes of sockeye salmon, or to carry it in my case 7 days a week, as opposed to just for the weekend. But I think people are over that sticker shock. You know, people are paying these $10, $20, $30 a pound prices for different seafood commodities. So there's no reason why high quality sockeye salmon, you know, can't be fetching $17.99 a pound, $19.99 a pound, or $22.99 a pound at retail. And if we can do that at retail, you know, then there's you know, more margin there for processors and for fishermen. So I'm encouraged and hope that, you know, we'll see much better prices on the grounds this year.
Yeah, and I'll kind of piggyback on that. And, you know, I think there's a couple different things that we've seen over the years that I think interesting to draw attention to. You know, the last time we had a really low base price besides 2020 was in 2015, when it was 50 cents. And coming off of the 2014 season, pretty much everything that could go wrong in the market did. And we saw wholesale prices drop precipitously. And then, you know, 2015, the 50 cent base price. But I think fishermen and the entire supply chain, but definitely starting with the fishermen, did an amazing job of, you know, not taking maybe anger out on the fish. And a lot of great fish were packed that year. It was sold into a market at very competitive prices. A lot of people, there was a lot of promotions at the retail and grocery stores that really got off the ground and got going back then. And we've seen that demand carry through, and it really built, you know, from 2016 into 17, 18, and 19. And we did see some pretty good prices in 2018 and 2019. You know, I think in 2018, some of the drift fishermen got up to a $1.90 or a little more. So, you know, I think if there is strong demand, we will eventually see that reflected in prices. And, you know, again, this quality plays in so much to that demand. The other thing I wanted to say about 2020 is that the retail partners that we work with, I asked them a lot over the past 12 months, you know, how did the quality look coming off of 2020? Because it was a historically compressed run. I mean, the run was probably more compressed than any year we've seen. So we were, I guess, curious to see if we were going to have a lot of problems with quality. And we didn't get that feedback at all. They said, you know, it looks really good. It's on par with, you know, the 2019 and 2018. And so we got good grades from the marketing partners we work with, which again is just a big hats off to the fishermen last year for and the processors for being able to catch and process this huge rush of fish that happened for about a 7 to 10 day period last year. So you know, and we touched on this in our prior episode, but you know, market conditions for this year are very good, and a lot of that is due to what Chuck was mentioning, how strong the consumer and retail demand is, especially in the North American and U.S. market. So, you know, pricing in the Bay always remains to be seen, but it does feel like quality, I think it's paying dividends. I think if we didn't have the quality improvement that we've seen over the past 5-10 years, things would be a lot different in this fishery. And that sort of transformation is not something to take lightly. And so I think the fact that we're where we're at, you know, is still very promising. And it looks good going forward. And a lot of that is due to the improvements in quality.
And maybe Francis might have a kind of a answer to this, but thinking about BBRSDA's push for fishermen to chill their fish over the past decade, we've seen different methods of chilling fish, right? There's RSW and then there is slush ice. And can you go a little bit over the differences that you all have seen with those two different methods of chilling?
Absolutely. More and more fishermen are transitioning to using RSW. You know, once it's installed, it's so much less work to use to chill your fish, but many fishermen are still utilizing slush ice. Last year, in 2020, 83% of the drift catch was chilled with RSW, so the vast majority, but 11% of the catch did use slush ice to chill their fish, and it's, you know, still a very effective method if you do not have RSW. The 10 major processors who participate in the quality survey do report that fish chilled with RSW is significantly better quality than fish chilled with slush ice. But again, slush ice is a great option if you don't have RSW installed. And we have, BBRSDA has invested in fish quality through many different programs that serve both boats with RSW and boats using ice.
Okay, got it. And just out of my own curiosity, what is the difference, you know, why would you see a difference in quality between slush ice and RSW? Processors say, we prefer RSW. Why would that be?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's because RSW is so much more consistent. Using ice, using slush ice, you're mixing the ice with seawater, and that's the coldest it's ever going to be. From there, the temperature is going to start going up, and especially as you add more salmon. And so with RSW, that's what the system is doing, is chilling that water throughout the day and keeping it a nice, cold, consistent temperature.
Got it.
Yeah, if you're putting a whole bunch of, some of the slush, you know, chilling is done in fairly small vats. So if you put a lot of biomass that's, you know, 55 or 60 degrees, because the fish come out of the water, same temperature as the water. So if the water is 55, your fish are 55. So you have the slush ice, which is running, you know, 31 degrees or 32 degrees. And then you put in 50 pounds of sockeye salmon at 55, all of a sudden you've got 43 or 44 degree water. So it's a manual process with the slush ice. And if you're managing it well, you can do it just as well as RSW. But if you don't manage it well, you know, you're still going to chill your fish, but you're not going to get, you know, down to under 36 degrees as fast or as long with slush ice.
Gotcha. You know, in the past, processors have struggled with demands for ice. And I think in 2018, there was some of that where they were limiting how much ice they were selling to fishermen. And kind of with that in mind, how can fishermen get ice this summer? Where should they go?
Good question. This year, one new program that the RSDA has going on is an ice shuttle in the Nooshigak district. And this will be bringing fish from the Bristol Made Ice Barge, which is operated in partnership with BBEDC and Trident Seafood. So that's been an ongoing project. The Bristol Made is anchored there at Clark's Point in the Nooshigak district. And they will be supplying ice to an ice shuttle vessel, and it's a Chinook seiner called the Alaska Rose. And the Alaska Rose will be getting ice from the ice barge and shuttling it, transferring it down to the south line in the Nooshigak, so the south end of Schooner's Channel. And this is to make ice more accessible to fishermen, to Chuck's point, you know, being able to resupply ice and get as much as needed without that long run back all the way up river to get more ice. And so Nooshigak fishermen, especially those who rely on ice, please keep your eye out for the Alaska Rose, and they'll be standing by on channel 78, and we'll be bringing ice out further, closer to the line and hopefully more accessible from the fishing grounds. And there's also an ice barge, the Bristol Lady in Naknek, and again, that's operated in partnership with BBEDC and OBI Seafoods.
Before I forget, I do want to say the cost of ice coming off the ice shuttle, the Alaska Rose, in the Noosh will be $310 a ton. $110 of that is a transportation fee, so it will be more expensive than ice coming straight off the ice barges, Bristol Made and Bristol Lady, but should save fishermen a lot of time.
Got it. And, you know, when I was looking at what you were sending over ahead of our conversation today, you mentioned what BBRSDA is spending on ice projects, and that's really interesting to me because, you know, it's kind of a conglomeration of all of your efforts in terms of quality control and promoting better quality for fish among the Bristol Bay fleet, and you know, what BBRSDA's actual role is. So can you kind of walk through what the spending looks like for ice projects?
Absolutely. And we do get a few questions from fishermen about, you know, why does RSDA still support ice availability when so many boats have transitioned to RSW? And it's worth explaining that, you know, as the survey indicates, about 17% of the drift catch relies on ice to be chilled. 17% of the catch is coming off boats that do not have RSW. And then when we look at BBRSDA's budget and what is spent on ice projects, it's only about 6%. So the return on investment is pretty significant. When we look at what BBRSD spends on providing ice to fishermen, that's 6% of the budget. And then when we compare that to the number of pounds of salmon that are chilled with that ice made available, and thus receive a chilling bonus, then that return to the fleet is over a 2,000% return on investment. As all fishermen know, ice is an important backup plan for fishermen who do have RSW. It's everyone's worst nightmare to have their RSW go down mid-season and have to miss those chilling bonuses. So yeah, it makes sense for us to still be invested in ice, you know, as we hope to continue to see this transition to RSW reach the 100% mark within hopefully not too much longer.
I just wanted to make sure that we give a lot of props to our partners in this. You know, BBEDC also, you know, spends their funds to support ice projects in the Bay. And it's, you know, critical. I mean, they really do a lot to support the ice barges. It's certainly not just BBRSDA helping drive quality. In fact, I think the biggest thing that's been done is the chilling bonuses, right? The quality bonuses, not just chilling, but handling as well. You know, but again, that's a reaction to the changing product forms and the changing markets. And so giving that carrot to fishermen to take better care of the fish, because that's what's needed to access changing market conditions, you know, that's been a big driving factor in terms of how we've seen more fish chilled in recent years. But yeah, I think just back to Francis's point, you know, we still have a around 17% of the fleet, or at least 17% of the fish that, you know, that needs to be chilled. And the best thing the RSDA can probably do to, you know, for that segment of the fleet is to help them as much as possible chill their fish. That's what's going to raise the value of the fishery the most. And for those that are already chilling their fish with RSW, you know, most of our spending goes towards marketing and sustainability efforts. And I'd say aside from ice, there we have some interesting RSW projects that I'm sure we'll talk about here in a little bit. But Chuck, what was it you wanted to add on there?
Oh, well, so one of the things that's different about the Bristol Bay sockeye business versus almost any other fishery out there is the fact that you're only as good as your weakest link. Because the nature of the fishery, it's such a mass fishery. There's so much fish coming in at such a short period of time. You know, they all get lumped into the same tenders and they all go to the same processing plants. So if 17 out of 100 have much lower scores in quality, that brings down the quality for everybody. And the way I look at it in the grocery store is, if you're a consumer and you go to the grocery store and you buy chicken, you know, 20 times in a row, you expect and you get 20 good, you know, chicken meals in a row. If you go to the fresh fish market and you buy fresh fish 20 times in a row, are you going to get good, high quality fish 20 times in a row? And unfortunately, the answer is probably not.
Yeah, and I think what you're driving at there, Chuck, too, just I want to make sure we highlight that, you know, if there is discounts or waste that happens because of quality, that has to be made up for essentially by the other fish. And so by helping the lower quality, you know, segment of the harvest, you know, raise that bar up, what we should see is hopefully less waste and less discounting happening and more value being added as the supply, you know, as it goes through the supply chain. And at the end of the day, that should, you know, transfer back to fishermen. And, you know, I've heard board members say, you know, being around BBRSD for quite a while, you know, I know some of them tell their crews, hey, every fish is a chance to gain or lose a customer. It's just, you know, quality is so critical. It's one of the highest things that consumers look for outside of taste. And of course, it impacts taste.
Got it. Just looking at the time here really quick, guys, I think we're going to move on pretty quick. But let's go on to Chuck. So Chuck, you mentioned a quality reader. Could you go into how that works and how that ties into Bristol Bay's fishery?
Sure. So the traditional method for measuring fish quality has been what's called an organoleptic examination. And that means you use your organs. You use your nose, your eyes, your hands. So is the fish slimy? You're using your eyes. Are there bruises there? Are there scales missing from the fish? Are the gills, you know, getting brown or green? So that's how a trained inspector would inspect fish quality. And it's very difficult, especially in a mass volume fishery like Bristol Bay sockeye, to get good sampling of the quality. So there is a technology that's been used actually for about 30 years for measuring body fat and body composition in humans, and that's called biological impedance analysis, or BIA. That same technology we have adapted for measuring fish, and it's very accurate for measuring fish quality, for measuring fish health, and, you know, fish fat. So if we've got some fat salmon, we'll know that. So it takes about a second to take a measurement. There's little handheld devices that BBRSDA has contracted with us, and they're on, I think, 10 or so tenders, maybe 11 tenders this year. There's also going to be a couple at some processing plants, and they're, you know, they can check it faster. So it takes 2 seconds to take a measurement, as opposed to the old organoleptic examination way, which if you did it right, it was really like 10 minutes, you know, per batch. So you can measure a lot more fish a lot more accurately, because it's not like somebody has a cold and they can't smell one day. This machine is very consistent and very accurate. So we're getting a better picture of what the quality is by using the what's called the Certified Quality Reader, or CQR. I did want to touch on what the CQR does. You know, I said how it does it and what, you know, how it works, but why did BBRST, you know, want to use this? And I think there's a couple of reasons why. One is they can get a baseline of what the fish quality was, say, in 2020, which we did measure a lot of fish. Over almost 7,000 measurements were taken in Bristol Bay in 2020. And we'll be able to see as more RSW is adopted, as better handling practices are adopted, we'll see better quality. And I think BBRSDA can take that data and go to the retailers and to the food service suppliers and say, look at the quality improvements that we've made. There's other ways that we'll be able to slice and dice that data, because this year we're now capturing a lot of data. So was it a drift net or was it a set net program? And what's the difference in quality there? You know, is it an RSW boat versus a slush ice boat? And what's the difference in quality there? And we can very very closely define, you know, the quality coming out of those different things. So I think BBRSDA is going to get a lot of value out of that data as time goes. And, you know, the whole goal is to get more dollars per pound for the fishermen. And I think the CQR can help do that by you know, helping promote how good the quality is and helping identify best handling practices.
As we wrap up here, there are two more programs that you wanted to talk about. Go ahead, Frances.
Thank you. Yeah, one new program this year is an RSW Technician Apprentice Program. So this year, BBRSDA is helping support the wages of three RSW apprentices who are working with three different companies for the 2021 season. So we know they're out there working hard right now, getting boats launched and making sure RSW is up and running for the season. And this program is designed to help existing RSW technicians increase their capacity to efficiently serve more boats. We know how it is in the Bay. Everyone needs their boat maintenance at the same time in a hurry. And then our long-term goal with the program is to train more technicians in Bristol Bay. It's not just Bristol Bay that seems to, you know, have a shortage of technicians. It's everywhere. And we know, especially as more and more boats shift to using RSW, this is a really important need. And the RSW units are such an important tool for quality. So we're really excited to have three new apprentices in the Bay, and we hope they will continue to return and help us keep our units running. The second one is for those looking to upgrade systems, whether it's RSW or others over the winter, there's a grant available through the Energy Audit Program with SWAMSE and USDA, and it can be used for upgrading or installing RSW, for insulating your fish holds, for hold zoning, for replacing lighting, and more. And the USDA, it's the USDA REAP grant, and it can cover 25% of the cost of improvement. The timeline of the program is really important to keep in mind. You have to apply before you spend any money on the project. Please reach out to SWAMSE or BBRSDA, and we can help you get that process rolling as you're planning your project.
Yeah, it's best to apply to that before October, right, Frances? Kind of the timeline there?
Yes, thank you. So yeah, if you're thinking of any improvements or upgrades, please check, make sure, see if it's an eligible thing and do that with us in the fall so you can be first in line for the October cycle.
Got it.
I just want to interject something on, sure. You know, RSW units. For a long time, for many years, you know, before Frances or I got here, the board has, you know, had a goal of increasing the number of RSW units out there. The organization and the board really does want to support RSW as much as possible. And so the apprenticeship program, we know there's a bottleneck of service in the Bay. And so we're trying to support that and trying to grow that service capacity. You know, in the past, we've had units available at a discount. And then even going back further, I think in the early 2000s, we put in some support funding for showing how a smaller RSW unit could be used on an older, smaller boat. And so, you know, we're always looking for ways, how can we support this fleet in chilling more fish, whether that's through ice or even, I'd say, preferably RSW. And so, you know, any ideas that the fleet has, we're always got our ears open for that.
Awesome.
Can I just jump in with one more thing?
Sure, yeah.
So one, I want to make sure I call out one more time how much BVRSDA has meant to this fishery in improving quality. The quality of the fish that's being produced today is so superior to what it was 5 years ago, and especially 10 or 20 years ago. It's amazing. It's made a whole new market for sockeye salmon, and I love that.
Thank you, Chuck. And I think when you say BBRSDA, you're referring to the entire membership, the whole fleet out there working hard to use best practices and continue to improve the quality of the Bristol Bay sockeye that's going to market. Thanks again to Chuck Anderson and Izzy Ross for talking to us about quality today. Please join us next time as we discuss everything BBRSDA does to market your sockeye salmon on the next BBRSDA Waypoints Radio.